Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper, and tonight we're going to continue with our long-range shooting. We've had two nights now. The first night, we talked about some generalities, you know, what you need. If we're ever attacked by a foreign country, if we're attacked by tyranny from within, if we're attacked by marauders and looters or rapists or whatever, and if you don't believe that that happens, check out the last time that that Los Angeles erupted in riots. You saw shopkeepers on roofs of their buildings and in the doorways of their shops to protect themselves from being wiped out, their lives destroyed by looters. And it was those shopkeepers with their guns that managed to save their business and their family from financial ruin. As mobs just went from street to street, shop to shop, house to house, business to business, breaking in, looting, and then burning. For no reason whatsoever. No reason whatsoever. The riots lasted for days. Supermarkets ran out of food. And when the supermarkets ran out of food and they couldn't get in to get any food, they smashed in the supermarkets and robbed what was left and burned them. Beat up the market managers just because they didn't have any food. They didn't have any food because the people were rioting and presented a danger and the trucks refused to deliver it. There are fools in this country today, folks. Lots of fools. And they're not of any one particular color, ladies and gentlemen, because if you were watching the television screen as closely as I was, the looters weren't just black. There were white looters and Hispanic looters and Oriental looters. They came in all shapes, colors, races, and sizes. Now, if you don't believe me, go get the tapes and look. It's called opportunity. There was no law and order. There were no police patrols. Chief Gates had pulled all the police out of the area and told them to leave the rioters alone and not to do anything to try and stop them. Worst thing he could have ever done. The only way to stop looting is to shoot looters. And that's what the shopkeepers did. Majority of them were Korean shopkeepers. Took up arms to protect their investments, their shops. I don't know if they actually shot anybody or not, and I don't care if they did. It's okay with me. Because that's the only way to stop that kind of behavior, is to shoot the looters. And that's always been what's been done in the past in this country and in other countries. Police are usually ordered to shoot looters. But, you know, in this New World Order, this politically correct atmosphere, the criminals are now the victims of those whom they're destroying. Can you believe that? I read an article on the internet today where in Great Britain, a man had a shop. Burglars broke into his shop with weapons and were beating him and stealing from him and breaking windows and breaking merchandise. And he shot one of them. Now he's in prison. And the government, in the form of the Home Office, is consulting with the man he shot to determine what his prison release date should be. Now, folks, that's just plain insanity. That's backwards. That's upside down. They've stood the law on its head. In this country, they've completely perverted the law. The government is totally out of control. And I'm talking about the federal government. Some state governments are also, ladies and gentlemen. But the federal government is completely out of control, operating under the color of law outside their jurisdiction, enforcing laws that don't even exist. When you challenge them to show you the law, they can't, they won't. Many, many examples of that. For years, They would break down doors with no search warrants, seize property, confiscate bank accounts, cars, land, homes, recreation vehicles, and never charge those people with a crime and never return their property. Today, on the suspicion that you're a drug dealer, just on the suspicion, they can seize all your property, all your bank accounts, everything that you own, and the police department can keep it or keep the proceeds when it's auctioned off. Police departments, sheriff departments, federal agencies, whatever. So if you've got corrupt police officials and they covet your property, you know, somebody in the middle of the night is liable to plant a little packet of cocaine or something on your property without your knowledge. All of a sudden, you're a dope dealer and you lose everything. Well, the only remedy for that, folks, is to protect yourself. Defend yourself. And that's what we're talking about tonight. Defending ourselves against tyranny. We're not talking about attacking anyone. We're talking about defending ourselves against tyranny. We're talking about being able to fight against an enemy invader. And if we don't do something about communist China and the new turn that Russia has taken, one of these days we're going to have to do that. We're talking about defending ourselves against a government gone mad that comes against us to disarm us. In other words, they throw the Constitution in the trash can, ignore the second article and amendment, and come to disarm the citizens of this country. In which case, we have to fall back upon the second article and amendment and our duty to restore a constitutional Republican government. Which means at that time, during open warfare, we will take the offensive, and we must be able to do that. We must be able to fulfill our duty as the militia. If you think that's radical, read your state constitution, read the Constitution for the United States and the Bill of Rights, then read the United States Code concerning the militia and your state laws concerning the militia, and you'll find out that most of you listening, no matter where you are already members of the militia and are obligated to protect and defend the Constitution of your state and of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic. If you are between the ages of 17 and 45, and if you've ever served in the armed forces, any of the armed forces of this nation or the National Guard, then you are members of the militia by law until age 63. By law. That includes retired personnel. Nobody else has ever told you that. Nobody else ever would. And you'd never know it if you hadn't listened to this broadcast or visited our website at williamcooper.com. Tonight, we're going to go a step farther. We told you what you needed. You need one assault rifle, what's called an assault rifle. An assault rifle is just a semi-automatic rifle of any kind. That's what they call an assault rifle today. Actually, an assault rifle is any rifle used to assault somebody. Any rifle. An assault weapon is any weapon used to assault somebody. If you assault somebody with a shovel, that becomes an assault shovel. That's the truth of the matter. They use these terms to demonize certain weapons and certain people. Nothing is an assault weapon until it is used to assault somebody. And that's the truth. But generally what they call today an assault weapon is any semi-automatic rifle. You need a semi-automatic rifle for short-range fighting. The construction of a semi-automatic rifle does not make it accurate at long ranges. Now, there are some exceptions to that rule. Some semi-automatic rifles have been accurized for match performance. And those rifles are extremely accurate out to some pretty hefty ranges. But most off-the-shelf semi-automatic rifles are not accurate at long ranges, and you wouldn't want to use them for that. They're good for anywhere from you out to about 300 yards. Out to about 300 yards. That's generally the maximum accurate range that you can use a semi-automatic weapon. There are some, very few, but there are some semi-automatic weapons that you can take off the shelf and still get reasonable accuracy out to about 500 yards. For long-range shooting, you need a bolt-action rifle. A bolt-action rifle. Minimum of 30 caliber if you want that bullet to do any damage when it hits. Minimum 30 caliber. 30 caliber includes 308, includes 30 anything. Now I'm talking caliber, I'm not talking cartridge yet. For instance, a 30-30 round or cartridge that has been used so much in this country for deer hunting for so many years, it's 30-06 and 30-30 have been the standard deer rifle in this country for generations, literally generations. While a 30-06 will perform admirably at long range, the 30-30 will not. The shell, the cartridge case, is not large enough to put enough powder in it to give a 30 caliber round enough velocity and throw enough weight out to a long enough range to maintain a flat enough trajectory and still be able to have enough foot-pounds of energy to do some damage. And you need it to do the damage when it gets there. For long-range shooting, and since we're talking about people who are not ever going to be expert marksmen, probably don't want to be, may have done some shooting in their life, may go hunting every year, but may not be an expert marksman and may not be into ballistics and all of this other stuff, reloading, you don't want to do reloading. Maybe you don't have the money to do all this stuff. What you need is an off-the-shelf rifle with a 26-inch barrel. It's got to be bolt-action. Bolt-action, off-the-shelf, with a 26-inch barrel, and a synthetic stock. You should try to get one where the barrel is floated off the shelf. That's it. You're not going to do anything else to this rifle. You're not going to take it down and have it accurized. You're not going to have anything done to it except you're going to clean it and maintain it in a proper manner, period. You want to buy off-the-shelf scope mounts, scope rings, and a scope. And we talked about that the first night. And you're going to buy off-the-shelf bullets. Off-the-shelf, I should say, cartridges. A cartridge is a loaded round ready to fire. They generally come in boxes that hold 20 rounds. You're going to buy off-the-shelf cartridges for your rifle. Now, you should spend a little time with somebody in your area that knows a little bit about rifles so that you can determine what rifle that you want to buy. I'm going to tell you right off the bat, Remington makes an excellent off-the-shelf long-range rifle. Now, it's not the best, and you're not going to compete in any matches and win with it unless you do some custom work to it. But right off the shelf, it will suffice for what we're doing. And you can get it in a 26-inch barrel. Also, Remington makes a Varminter rifle that you can get in a 26-inch barrel at the lesser calibers. Okay? You can get a Varminter in 308. It's a good rifle. The barrel is floated. It's bolt action. Has a good synthetic stock on it. And it's pretty accurate for an off-the-shelf rifle. Sendero you can get that in the higher calibers. Winchester makes the Model 70, which also you can get in the 26-inch barrel. It's a pretty good, accurate rifle. Now, there are other manufacturers that make good rifles. So I'm not just limiting your choice to these two manufacturers. I am not advertising Remington or Winchester. In fact, if you were to ask me personally, I would tell you don't ever buy a Winchester made after 1964. I don't care what they call it. But still, the Model 70 is a reasonable choice if that's what you want to get. Savage makes some good rifles. Ruger makes some excellent rifles. So just because I just mentioned a couple, it's due to time restraint, and I don't want to get into the good or the bad of all of these different manufacturers. Here's what you need. You need to take that rifle, whichever one you chose, mount your scope, take your cartridges, whichever ones you decide that you're going to use. Now, once you decide on a cartridge, folks, and you might want to try a few different brands before you settle upon what you're going to use in your rifle, because you'll find that different rifles like different brands and different loads, and sometimes even different bullets to get better accuracy. Fire several different brands and several different types, but try to stick to a pointed tip bullet with a boat tail. Can be a hollow point boat tail. Can be a soft point boat tail. It can be a Spitzer full metal jacket Spitzer boat tail. It can be any of those. Just make sure that you've got a pointed tip and a boat tail. And if you're shooting .308, you should stick to around 168 grains. You can go up higher than that if you want to. But see what it does to your trajectory table also. But you watch. Fire these different rounds in 5-round groups at 100 yards, and you'll see that some bullets make tighter groups and are more accurate than others. You want to choose the bullet or the cartridge that is the most accurate for your particular rifle, and then don't ever change again. Period. Because the key to what I'm teaching you is consistency. And you can only be consistent if you're firing with the same rifle, with the same scope, with the same cartridges, all the time. You have to learn what that rifle is capable of. You have to learn how to use your scope. You have to learn what that cartridge will do consistently in that rifle at different ranges all the time. Okay? You need good trajectory tables. If you have a computer, I suggest you get a ballistic program. They're all over the internet. Do a search on Google for ballistics, and you're going to find all kinds of different ballistic programs. Choose the one you like the best, buy it, and use it. You might want to go to some of the firearms forums and ask around and find people what they use and what they think is the best. Get what's best for you. Learn to use that ballistics program. If you don't have a computer, you don't need a ballistics program, because you can get your trajectory tables, which will include velocity, ballistic coefficient, bullet height above line of sight or below line of sight, velocity, energy in foot-pounds at different ranges, your Taylor index, wind drift, time of flight. You can even get minute of angle adjustment tables for your scope from your scope manufacturer. But write to or call the company that makes the cartridges that you've decided to use, and they will tell you how to get a hold of all of the tables that you need for that cartridge, for the length of barrel for your rifle. And they'll help you. Get those tables and use them. Now, it's best to have your tables in 25-yard increments. if you want to really see what that cartridge is going to do. Now remember, the way they test those cartridges in the factory and get their tables is from firing in a locked down barrel that doesn't move with recoil. Now, if the barrel doesn't move with recoil, that means what normally would be spent on you, on your shoulder as recoil, is still behind the bullet. So their velocities are going to be a little bit faster than what you're going to actually get with a rifle against your shoulder, because you can't keep that rifle from pushing your shoulder back. I don't care how strong or tough you think you are. You can't do it. The only way to do it is lock it down in a table that is securely fastened to the floor, that is solid and rigid and won't move. Okay? Some bench rest shooters do that stuff, but you're not going to do it. No way. You're going to be out fighting a war. You're not going to be carrying bench rest tables around with you. At least I hope you're not. If you are, you're not going to live very long. Now, I'm going to talk about my rifle tonight because I know about my rifle, and you're going to use tables for your rifle. And no matter what rifle I pick, it's going to be different from a lot of the rifles that a lot of you have. So it doesn't make any difference. What I do is I have memorized what I need to know for my particular rifle. And I can change the zero on my rifle anytime I want to simply by dialing in the new zero into my scope. And you'll learn to do that at some point later in this series of broadcasts that we're going to do on shooting. And they may not always be in a row. In other words, we may not have another broadcast on shooting for a week or two. So pay attention. Okay? My rifle is a 375 H&H Magnum Ackley Improved, which means I can't buy cartridges off the shelf. Nobody makes them, to my knowledge. Somebody might, but if they do, I don't know about it. And I wouldn't do that anyway because I'm a reloader and I like consistency. And I know that unless I do everything absolutely perfect and weigh everything and only accept bullets within a certain weight limit and cartridges that are, you know, perfectly trimmed to put my bullet at a certain place, you know, always so that there are a certain distance from the lands in the barrel, so that the headspace is always perfect, so that I have exactly the right amount of powder in each cartridge, that the cartridges were cleaned properly, that the primers are seated, and that there's no burrs on the inside of the primer holes. And so I make my own cartridges. And it's not a cartridge that you can buy anywhere in any store, period. It's what we call a Wildcat. It's more powerful than a 375 H&H Magnum, which is one of the most powerful rounds ever made in the history of shooting. It has traditionally been used to bring down the biggest game in Africa. It's an elephant gun is what it is. There's not a piece of body armor in the world that can stop what I shoot out of my rifle. At least that I've ever seen. None that I've ever seen or know about. And before my bullets are used to make my cartridges, I make them further deadly by making them armor piercing. I put them in a center jig on a drill press. I drill a hole in the exact center of the tip of the bullet. And I put a tungsten rod in there, coated lightly, with an adhesive that will make sure that that tip stays in there. And if you ever do this, you have to make sure that you're doing it perfectly, because if you drill an off-center hole, your bullet will wobble in flight. So, even if there were a piece of body armor in the world that might stop a 375 H&H Magnum Ackley-improved 300-grain Spitzer boat-tail bullet, when I get through with it, there's not. In fact, this bullet, when I'm through with it, will do just about the same thing as a 50 caliber bullet will do, except it doesn't have the range. It doesn't have the range of a 50 BMG. Now, just to give you an example, when I fire this bullet, it's a 300 grain bullet. That's a big bullet, believe me. The velocity at the muzzle is 2,870 feet per second. The energy at the muzzle in foot-pounds is 5,486 foot-pounds of energy. Now, when that bullet reaches the type of ranges that we're talking about, for instance, we're talking about 700 feet on this program, on this broadcast, for what we're doing. When that bullet, 700 yards, when that bullet reaches 700 yards, it still has 1,767 foot-pounds of energy, and it's still traveling at 1,629 feet per second. That's some heavy-duty stuff. Now, the whole thrust of me telling you this is just to give you some idea of what you're capable of doing if you want to do it, and to make sure that you understand what all this is all about. Let's not mince words, folks. Firearms were invented to do two things: kill animals, to put meat on the table, and to kill people in time of war. Now, killing people in time of war also includes defending yourself against attack. Defending yourself against attack. In other words, guns were made to kill. Period. That drives some people up the wall, but it's the truth. It levels the playing field, which is why the Founding Fathers gave us the right to keep and bear arms in the second article in amendment, because a people without guns facing an enemy or a tyrant with guns are helpless, are enslaved, are killed, are wiped off the face of the earth. Just think how different history might have been written if the Jewish people in Europe had not had an aversion to owning and using firearms. Just think what would have happened if the Jewish people had banded together to defend themselves against what Nazi Germany brought against them. Now, if you think that might not have changed the course of history, study what happened with when a handful of Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto took up arms against their German captors, and Germany, Nazi Germany, had to divert three entire divisions of troops to put down the Warsaw Ghetto uprising. Three divisions. There have been military historians who have actually claimed that if Germany had not diverted three divisions to put down the uprising in the Warsaw Ghetto against just a handful of starving Jews who had guns, Germany may have been able to prolong the war for many months, or maybe a year or two later, or even may have been able to recover from their losses and may have won the war. So this is not far-fetched at all. It's the truth. They certainly may have been able to save many millions from the concentration camps. They may have been able to engage the Germans on another front and cause the war to end years earlier. Because remember, the persecution of the Jews started in the 30s. If the Jews had resisted with the force of arms during the 30s, before World War II even started, there may never have even been a World War II. And that's why I find it so absolutely incredible to learn that the Jewish people are doing the same thing all over again for the most part in this country. Now, not every Jewish American is against the ownership of firearms. We know that. There are many Jewish people who hunt, who believe solidly in the Constitution and in the Bill of Rights and the Second Article of Amendment. Aaron Zellman, my good friend, started Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership and has done an awful lot about changing the minds of many people about firearms ownership and the reason the Founding Fathers gave us the Second Article in Amendment. So it's not radical to own firearms. It's not extremism. It is damn intelligent. Damn intelligent. That is, if you care about your life, if you care about the lives of your family members and your neighbors and your friends, if you really truly care about eventually making the world safe for people to live in. Because governments won't stop doing some of the stupid things they do until people learn how to keep them in their cage where they belong. And that's really important in this country. So, you've got to be able to hit what you shoot at. Because most of the people, when wars break out, who end up fighting for their country or for their community or for their neighborhood or for their family or just carrying a gun so that they can get to a safe place, have never had to use a firearm before in their life. And the whole gist of these programs is to make sure that when you take up arms in defense of your family, your community, your state, or your country, that you can do justice by yourself and by those that you're with fighting and hit whatever you're aiming at. Now, you can't use the system that I'm teaching you if you're going to go deer hunting or elk hunting. That deer or that elk is no threat to you. They're not going to come after you and try to kill you. Unless you're stupid enough to get close to them and surprise them and shock them, and there happens to be a buck standing within just a few feet of you, you might get killed. But generally, you're in no danger from an elk or deer or any of the game that you're going to go hunting, even grizzly bear. I don't know any hunters who sneak up close to a grizzly bear. They usually bag them from several hundred yards away. So you owe that animal that you're going to kill the decency and the respect to put a shot in the right organ to kill that animal quickly so that it doesn't suffer. The method that I'm teaching you is just to hit your target, which means most of the time you're probably just going to wound your target and put that man out of action so that he cannot come and hurt you or your family or your community or your fellow patriots or your militia or your army unit. And you're not going to care if he's suffering because given the same chance, that man would do the same thing to you in a heartbeat because he's your enemy. So don't go feeling sorry for him. The only time you should feel sorry for your enemy is if you are a tyrant and oppressor, and by the very nature of your being, that tells me that you wouldn't. If you're the victim of attack or oppression, don't feel sorry for the enemy. Do what you have to do to stop them, to inflict as many casualties upon them as you possibly can so that they cannot hurt you or your family or your neighbors or your community anymore. And that's what I'm teaching you. take an off-the-shelf rifle, off-the-shelf scope, off-the-shelf cartridges, and be effective out to 700 yards. And you will do it. Now, here's what I know about the average soldier that I ever served with. Now, if we should be invaded by the Chinese, they're much shorter than we are, and you're going to have to tighten up these figures. So understand that. But for the average Caucasian soldier, or black soldier, or Hispanic soldier, here's what you're going to have. 29 inches from crotch to shoulders. That's the length of the human torso on the average soldier, 29 inches. And I'm giving a little leeway. I'm giving a few inches leeway. And from the crotch to the top of the head is 41 inches. You need to know those two things. If you think you're going to be shooting at somebody shorter than that, or if you know you're going to be shooting at somebody shorter than that, you have to mentally adjust what you're doing. Okay? So I plug these figures in to my ballistics table, and I come up, I want to give myself some more leeway, so I do not want my bullet to drift above the line of sight. Now, you have two lines when you're dealing with a rifle. One is the line of the bore, and the other one is the line of sight. The line of the bore is where the barrel is pointing. Now, a bullet will never go where the barrel is pointing. It will go toward that direction until it leaves the end of the barrel, and then it will begin to fall. So the farther away you want to hit a target, the higher you have to lift the barrel. In other words, you're going to lob your bullet in a parabolic arc that's going to come out the end of the barrel, travel up, just like an outfielder throws a baseball to home plate. Have you ever seen that? He doesn't throw it straight at the catcher. If he did, it would never get there. At least not in time. He throws it up so that it goes in a parabolic arc up through the air till it reaches a zenith point, and then it begins to come back down, and hopefully if his brain has computed it correctly, it will drop right into the catcher's mitt. If not, the catcher begins to compute, and the catcher gets under the ball and puts his mitt in front of it and catches it. If it's within a distance where he can do that. Now, believe me, ladies and gentlemen, when you're firing a rifle, your target is not going to try to get under that bullet. Just the opposite is going to occur. If the target knows that you're shooting at him, he's going to try his best to get out of the way of that bullet or in a position where the bullet can't hit him. So, you have to know what you're doing. Now, my table right now is figured for zero wind drift. Right now, because on another program, we're going to talk about what to do if the wind is blowing. Right now, we're not going to have any wind right now. Okay? Also understand that very seldom are you ever going to find absolutely windless conditions. And that's another reason why you want to zero your rifle at 25 yards. Because even if there is wind, unless it's quite a bit of wind, the wind has very little or no effect on a bullet out to 25 yards, especially a 357 300 grain Spitzer boat tail. And I could crank some windage in here and show you that, because the computer will tell me that it's zero at 25 yards generally, and when it starts to have an effect, it's going to be very little, fractions of an inch. And I know this because I've done it, and I've fired in wind many times. The farther away from the target you are, the more effect the wind is going to have on your bullet, no matter what the bullet is. But the heavier bullets and the more streamlined bullets with the higher ballistic coefficients, the wind will have less of effect upon that particular bullet, especially if it's traveling at a high velocity. Okay, here we go. Here's what I plugged into my equation here. Hornaday, 375, 300 grain, boat tail, Spitzer, bullet. Muzzle velocity, it's actually a boat tail soft point bullet. Muzzle velocity, 2,870 feet per second. I know that my bullets consistently deliver that velocity. My cartridges, I should say, consistently deliver that velocity because I consistently, every once in a while, will check to make sure with a chronograph. We're not going to talk about what a chronograph is tonight. The bullet weight's 300 grain, 357 caliber. That's 375 caliber. That's 0.375 thousandths of an inch. Ballistic coefficient is 0.46. Angle of departure, 0. Height of sight above the bore in inches. And I measure from the center of the bore of the barrel to the center of the line of sight in the scope is 1.75 inches. Range to present zero is 550 yards. Range increments that's going to be printed out on my table is 25 yards. Starting range of zero, that's where I'm standing. And I'm going to end the range at 2,000 just so that I can see the parabolic arc of my bullet. Crosswind speed, zero. Now, when I fire my weapon at zero range, the bullet height is 1.75 inches beneath the line of sight, because that's what I measured from the center of the scope to the center of the bore. At 25 yards, the bullet height above the line of sight. Now remember, the line of sight is where I'm looking through the scope. In order to hit my target at 550 yards, the way I have zeroed the scope is that the bullet is actually pointed up when I fire, because adjusting for a 550-yard zero has made my crosshairs, put my crosshairs in a position where it's pointed directly at 550 yards, which puts the barrel in an up attitude. So that when the bullet leaves the barrel at some point, it's going to cross up over the line of sight. Now, a better way to think of it, so that you don't get confused about bullets rising, because they never do. The bullet is going in the direction it was pointed. What we're doing is cutting the line of sight through the parabolic arc of the bullet's path directly at the target. And that's the way you should always think of it. The bullet is not going up. You are merely pointing your line of sight through the parabolic arc of the bullet. That way you'll never get confused and make a statement to anybody that the bullet rises once it leaves the barrel. Because anybody who knows ballistics will look at you with that funny look, and they probably won't say anything, but they won't believe another word you say. Okay, folks. So, at 25 yards, my bullet is now 2.12 inches above the line of sight. It still has 5,287 pounds of energy. Now, it's going to keep rising above the line of sight until it reaches its zenith. In other words, that's the highest point in its parabolic arc that it's ever going to reach as it travels downrange toward the target. And that point is at 300 yards. So from where I fire my bullet at toward the target until it gets to 300 yards, the bullet is going in an arc that is curving from the muzzle as it's pointed up. It's dropping back down toward the earth. Okay? Where it reaches the highest point above the line of sight is at 300 yards. Where it reaches a height above the line of sight of 24.09 inches. So, now, here's how I know I'm going to hit my target, because from the time I fire that bullet, if my target is between me and 550 yards where I've zeroed my weapon, I'm going to put my crosshairs on the crotch of the target. I don't care about hitting him at any particular point. I just care about hitting him. And I don't particularly want to kill anybody. But if a man's wounded, he's out of action, and he's certainly not going to come and kill me or anybody else. Not for quite a while. And the more enemy soldiers you wound and put out of action, the more personnel they have to devote to take care of their wounded. And so more of their people have to come out of action in order to be able to do that. If you kill somebody, they just leave them lay there. Nobody comes out of action to take care of dead men. Okay? Also, if you just wound people when the war is over, they can get patched up and then go back to their families, which kind of makes me feel good. I hope that happens to everybody. But I also hope that our enemy gets put out of action and stays out of action. And if they come back, I hope they get put out of action again and that they stay out of action. But after Vietnam, folks, I don't particularly ever want to kill anybody. If they force me to, I will. But I don't want to. And nobody should ever want to. That's why there's something sick about people who volunteer to be snipers. They're sick people. Because a sniper is nothing more or less than a paid, cold-blooded assassin. And that's the truth. And if you're out there listening and you're a sniper and that makes you mad, hey, tough patootie, buddy. You've got to be sick to want to consciously put yourself in a position where you know you're going to be asked to kill people in cold blood. And if that's the mentality you have, then I've called it right. And you should stop being mad and stop wondering whatever made you volunteer for such a job. There's no glamour. There's no heroism in that at all. The only time anybody should set out to cold-bloodedly shoot somebody is in a war or in defense of yourself if you're attacked. Period. Period. Anyone who's a sniper for a law enforcement agency, a government agency, or a police department has taken on the role of judge, jury, and executioner and cuts out the entire concept of justice. If you don't like that, that's tough. It's the truth. Cold, hard truth. So here we go. I said when I set out, I was going to have a trajectory that between me and my zero, I would bring the bullet as close to 25 inches above the line of sight, but not over 25 inches. And what I've come up with is at 300 yards, the highest point the bullet is ever above the line of sight is 24.09 inches. Now remember, the bullet did not rise to get there. It actually dropped to get there. If the bullet was not affected by gravity and continued in the line of the bore when it was fired, it would be many feet above that position at that 300-yard mark instead of just 24.09 inches. Okay, now from 300 yards, from that point, the bullet is going to go back down toward the line of sight. It's dropping all the time. It's been dropping ever since it left the muzzle of the barrel. It never rose to get to that point. The line of sight, remember, is cutting through the parabolic arc of the bullet. So, if I place my crosshairs on the crotch of a man who has a torso 29 inches in length, I'm going to hit that man in no wind conditions. I'm going to hit him. No problem whatsoever every time I fire my rifle. Now, I'm a good enough shot, folks. I'm an expert marksman with a rifle. There's not too many people who can shoot a rifle better than I can. There are some, but not many. And the difference in our groups on a target at the same range isn't enough difference that it would make any difference. If I wanted to hit my target in the heart at 550 yards or 300 yards or 700 yards, I would hit him in the heart. Okay? And there are many people who can do that. Most of you better not even try. Now, I hope you can see the concept of why I have figured it this way. I don't have to memorize anything from me to 550 yards. I do have to remember that my zero is 550 yards. And when I get real close to my zero, I don't have to hold under anymore I can put the crosshairs wherever I want, and that's where my bullet's going to hit. Now, most of you with an off-the-shelf rifle are not going to hit exactly where you're aiming at that range. But if you're shooting like I'm teaching you to shoot, you will hit somewhere in the torso. And that's what you want to do, and that's why I'm teaching you this. Now, once the bullet goes beyond 550 yards, where I zeroed my rifle, now I have to shift my point of aim. And all I have to remember is this, folks. With my particular rifle, beyond 550 yards, all the way out to 650 yards, I shift my aim point to the hollow of the neck, directly in line with both shoulders. Because after 550 yards, my bullet begins to drop below the line of sight. At 575 yards, for instance, the bullet will hit 5.47 inches below where my crosshair is placed at the hollow in the throat between the two shoulders. At 600 yards, it will hit 11.61 inches below that point. At 625 yards, it will hit 18.44 inches below that point. At 650 yards, it will hit 26 inches below that point. And then I have two more places, or two more points that I have to remember. Okay? So here's all I have to remember. My zero is 550 yards. Between me and 550 yards, I place the crosshairs on the crotch of the individual I'm shooting at. At 550 yards, if I want to, I can put my crosshairs anywhere, and that's where my bullet's going to fall. Beyond 550 yards, out to, and including, 650 yards, I want to put my crosshairs on the hollow point of the throat between the two shoulders. Beyond 650 yards, I want to put my crosshairs exactly, ladies and gentlemen, 10 inches above the top of the head. And that's it. That's it, because our limit of where we're going to shoot is 700 yards. And at 700 yards, the bullet drops 43.45 inches. Okay? Time that just about right, because we're just at the end of the broadcast. How about that? So, I hope you're learning from this, and I hope you understand what this is all about and what it is that I am actually trying to teach you. And all of this is available to anybody if they want to learn it on any firing range, or probably 500 million books in any library. You can put this information together from any reloading manual, any ballistics tables, any trajectory tables, but most people don't have the common sense to figure out what I've told you tonight. You don't have to memorize all these tables. I know guys that think they're going to get in a war, and they're going to be trying to hit somebody everywhere they put the crosshairs. They've never been in a war. They don't know what happens to them in a war. They don't know that the enemy is not going to be cooperating with them in a war. They don't know that they're going to get excited and sometimes scared, and the adrenaline's going to be rushing in a war. And all you need to do is hit the target. Period. But these guys are memorizing the ballistics tables and the trajectories for every 10 yards out to 700 yards. And they don't need to do that. All you need to know is what I taught you tonight. And you may not need to know that much if you have a rifle that fires a flatter trajectory at a higher velocity. Now remember, you have to have velocity. You have to have a good ballistic coefficient. And you have to have a bullet that weighs enough to deliver a lot of foot-pounds of energy when it hits the target. Whatever you get and whatever you use. And last but not least, it doesn't do any good at all if you don't hit the target. So what I've taught you is a surefire way, in absolutely no wind condition, to hit your target every single time you pull the trigger. And once you hit the target, get the hell out of there. And I mean, like, right now. Remember, in a war that we're going to be forced to fight as civilian militia. You should never fire more than 2 shots from the same position, and you better fire them rapidly, one behind the other. And then move quickly. Get out of there fast. Good night, folks. God bless each and every single one of you. Good night, Annie Poon Allison. I love you. Terminated the live broadcast online, folks. We will still have our archives, which you can go and listen to anytime you want to. And we will be putting these programs up within 2 weeks of the time they air. These broadcasts on marksmanship will not ever be placed on the website. There's good reason for that. If you want to purchase a copy, each tape is $20. $20. Five or more, $15 a piece. 10 or more, $10 a piece. You can order them by sending cash or black money order, gold or silver coin, to HOT, H-O-T-T, 101.1 FM, P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona, 85925. Stay tuned. If you're living around Valley, stay tuned for all oldies most of the time. And for the rest of our audience, don't miss the hour of the time on Monday when we'll open the phone once again. One FM Eager, classic radio like you always wished it could be.